Good evening, everybody, and welcome into another edition of Crunch Time with JB and Double T. And tonight we come to you live from the friendly confines of Eagle Country 99.3, the Eagle's Nest here at 20 East High Street. And we got a lot of great topics to run down tonight. 30 minutes of nonstop sports conversation. We're going to get into some pro football, college football, high school football, and even some college basketball, JB.
That doesn't upset me, Travis. It might seem a little bit early because we're in the crunch time, no pun intended, of the high school football season here locally. But like you said, we'll save it for last. There's big time college hoops. October, November, outside of March Madness, this is one of the best times of year for sports, at least in this guy's eyes.
Yeah, and I kind of wish we had a more local NBA team so we could get into pro ball.
The Pacers are local enough. Come on, now treat them like that. They're the state's team.
They're the state's team.
We're still in Indiana.
I just don't know how many people follow it here locally, but that'd be a topic maybe we can get onto one of these days. But we're going to start in high school football because we still have three local teams that are alive in the IHSAA football state championship, and they all play at different levels, so we can root for them all here locally. And we saw the Lawrenceburg Tigers play this past Friday. It was our feature game of the week, and they just took Charlestown to the woodshed, 49-18. It was an impressive performance.
It was domination, Travis. And I ran into somebody Saturday morning at one of our youth basketball games, and he told me, he said, "Hey, John," he said, "you and Travis did a real good job in that pregame show," he said, "because you guys had me thinking that it was going to be a tight game." And I said, "Well, that's kind of our job, but you know what? Like, it wasn't just media talk. There was plenty of reason to believe that it was going to be a tight game. Charlestown 7-2, stingy defense, Division I athlete. That was a factor. Anytime anybody loses their best player, Marion Lukes, if you're not sure what I'm talking about or if you didn't catch the game, Charlestown came with a very, very featured running back, Marion Lukes. He entered the game banged up. After his third carry, maybe, he left the game hobbled. Didn't return until mop-up time, which was really weird to me. There's no sense in talking about that in much detail, Travis, but I don't know if I've ever seen a player of his caliber not be in the game while his team was getting taken to the woodshed.
Yeah.
And then play in mop-up time. But anyway, that was a factor. But Lawrenceburg was too good all over the field for anybody to say, "Oh, if he wouldn't have went out, Charlestown would have won." Lawrenceburg was gonna win that game.
Yeah, other than one interception that was thrown by Garrett Yoon, backed up against their own goal line, that resulted in a touchdown for Charlestown. It was really total domination and a pretty clean game for Lawrenceburg. I think they had maybe one or two penalties all night, and they were both on the defensive side of the ball. But Garrett spread the ball around 13-17. He had close to 300 yards. Having big brother Gavin back has been a huge for that offense, but I think he hit seven different receivers in that game, and then you had Adam Berg and Mason Kennedy, who were running physical and tiring out that defense as well, so they were firing on all cylinders.
Garrett's efficiency, I mean, Garrett's had a phenomenal season, but his efficiency, I don't have it in front of me, but his just yards per completion the past 2 weeks, I mean, like you said, he's pushing 300 yards Friday night on 17 attempts. It's not like they're throwing it up there 35, 40 yards, because they're 40 times. They're still running the ball. They've got great balance of their offense. And that defense was terrific. Like you said, the only touchdown Charlestown scored until the game was well out of reach was set up literally by
an interception that went down to the 1 yard line.
It was a 1 yard drive. The one play Garrett would like to have back. So they just dominated. That defensive line continues to dominate. And look, had Lawrenceburg got the opportunity to defend Lukes all night long, who knows how this game would have went. But the small sample size when they did, they bottled him up.
Yeah.
They tested the perimeter. The defensive ends turned him in. Rennekamp, Kennard, Dalton Dixon, you know, it was dominant.
As good as the running back Marion Lukes is, that offensive line still had to block that front seven,
exactly right.
And that was where it was going to be a big key in the game. But I just love this Lawrenceburg team so much. Their balance on offense, the different formations that they come out in. Sometimes they're heavy up front. Sometimes it's five wide. It's just crazy, and it's difficult to guard.
And to your point, let's make sure that we give Coach Koenig and his staff on both sides of the ball, offense coordinator Mike Manford, credit, because we're in that pregame show. We're talking about how Charlestown hasn't seen a passing attack like Lawrenceburg's. Their coach talked about it in the pregame. We're anticipating to see heavy doses of that, which we did. I mean, ultimately, Lawrenceburg torched them through the air. But Lawrenceburg just comes out and jumbo package, run it right at you. Mm-hmm. And Coach Koenig said, you know, hey, it wasn't a complex thought process. We thought, even though their defense was good, we thought that our physicality could bother them. We wanted to set the tone. So it's like you said, as many explosive plays as we've seen this team make and we'll see this team make, they come out of the chute against one of the best defenses they played all year and just pound Mason Kennedy 4 yards, 7 yards, 4 yards, 7 yards, you know, to set a tone.
Yeah, no, they're going to be on the road this Friday taking on a Greensburg team that we're all too familiar with. They've played close games over the past several years, and Coach Kniga actually previewed that game a little bit in the post game. Let's check out his comments.
Well, Greensburg, you know, they got a nice team. They got a nice quarterback, you know, who does a lot of things well for them. They got a big offensive line, and when we were there early, week four, I believe, you know, we got a big jump on them. And then we played really well the second half. We only gave up a field goal to them. But, you know, they got a nice offense. They finally got in the way from the bone, and now they're up with the trend of the spread football world. So we're going to have to play well. Plus, it's there, and, you know, Coach Moore does a great job. Defensive staff does a great job. We're very familiar with each other. I hope it's the Tigers, but the good news is there'll be an EIAC team playing for a regional, and that's what we like.
Yeah, and the big takeaway for me there was Greensburg kind of shifting their philosophy and going to a more spread offense. So it's a different Greensburg team than maybe people are accustomed to seeing over the past several years.
It is for sure. And, you know, man, I don't know how I want to say this because I don't think this Lawrenceburg team has a weakness. But if you're going to beat Lawrenceburg, you're going to have to throw the ball. You're going to have to get chunk plays. Look, they've won 10 games in a row. The only team that's beat them is 11-0 in 4A, and that's Essential. If you're going to beat Lawrenceburg, you're going to have to sling it around. You're going to have to get chunk plays. You know what I mean? You just have to.
And keep those chains moving and keep them off the field. Greensburg does have an exceptional junior quarterback in Toby Brogan, who has passed for over 1,000 yards. He's also rushed for over 1,000 yards. So their success a lot of times hinges on that young man.
And look, Travis, Greensburg is one of the more improved teams in the area. And Tiger fans, look, you can't compare scores in sports at any level, okay? I know what the score was when we beat them on September 13th, 49-17, okay? I also know that Lawrenceburg escaped Batesville by one, and Greensburg just beat Batesville by 24. So if you want to compare scores, there's a case to say Greensburg should beat us by 25. Any given Friday. You can't compare scores. But this Greensburg team is one of the more improved. Since September 13th, they lost a competitive game to South Dearborn. No shame in that. And since then, they've won five of their last six, the only setback being to East Central. And a lot of people in that first round, maybe you and I included, we labeled Franklin County as the dark horse in that sectional, didn't think they'd get to the semifinals, and they beat a much improved Franklin County team. So don't get me wrong, the Tigers are the favorite any way you slice it, but they got to show up any given Friday.
And it's out there in Greensburg on that grass, so you never know what's going to happen.
Hey, little gamesmanship. They might, I guess there's not a lot of mowing going on anyway, but that grass might be a little extra long to slow down.
Yeah, the Sundown Bird and Gavin Union and Garrett and all those guys, so we'll see. But if Lawrenceburg could advance, they would play Heritage Hills or Southridge in the regional. Fun to think about those matchups, perhaps. Speaking of East Central, who we talked about just a little bit ago, they're moving on, and they actually escaped a little bit because they were tied with Greenwood 28-all going into the fourth quarter, and then the Trojans outscored their opponent 21-7 in that fourth quarter. But Jake Fike was the story in this game. Five touchdowns, and he ran for almost 300 yards in this game, 286 to be exact, on 35 carries.
He's a beast. He's had an outstanding season and an outstanding career, and you know, what can you say? He's one of the best backs to come through this area since I've been, you know, back here in 8 years. And yeah, you know, the Trojans were tested, and, you know, I bet Coach Miners, now that he knows they get to advance, would say, hey, that's not a bad thing. You know, you're not going to, you know, go the distance without being tested. And one of the big plays, Travis, if I'm not mistaken, was East Central took a 7-point lead on a touchdown pass from Bond to Becker, and then a pick six on the ensuing possession by David Badescu. Mm-hmm. So there's that East Central defense, maybe on a night when they didn't have their best night, making a game-changing play there in the fourth quarter to give them a two-possession lead in the fourth quarter. And then, if you're Essential, two-possession lead in the fourth quarter, that's Fike time.
You go back to Fike. Yeah, absolutely.
Night.
See, this is the one thing I look at here on the stat sheet is Essential gave up 369 total yards,
right,
which is not their best performance of the year. And they were really caught off guard maybe by the quarterback from Greenwood, who had a very nice game, almost 300 yards passing. So this is probably a good game for them to kind of reset themselves and move forward to Mooresville, because they're going to face another good quarterback, so they can kind of use this week as motivation to do a little bit better in the pass game when they do face Mooresville on the road.
Yep, they'll be at Mooresville Friday night at 7, and like you said, some uncharacteristic stats on that stat sheet for East Central, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But like I said, what can you say about Badescu and that defense making that game-changing play to give them that two-possession lead? And hey, it's a postseason. season. And, you know, people that follow sports in this area, you know, they know, no disrespect to anybody in this area, obviously, but when you start mixing it up with those Indianapolis teams, a 4-5 record in that part of the state doesn't look like a 4-5 record in other parts of the state. And you know, so the Trojans, despite having the number one next to their name, have a difficult, you know, path. And, hey, they're one game away, as is the Milan Indians, Travis. Go ahead there with Milan. I know you got some numbers on that one.
Well, it was the Peyton Wirt show for the Milan Indians this past Friday as they took on Hagerstown at home, were able to beat them 34-14. So they're going to move on to play North Decatur in the final this Friday. They'll be at home once again. But Peyton Wirt in at quarterback. We've seen Parker Lewis for a majority of the year, but we weren't able to figure out exactly what happened with Parker, if he was an injury or he was benched. But nonetheless, Peyton Wirt, the junior, comes in and does a marvelous job of not only passing the ball, but had some good rushing stats as well. And I think he had an interception on defense. So it was really, I hate to say it was a one-man show when you got 22 out there doing their thing on offense and defense. But it started with Peyton with the big win there on Friday.
Yeah, he's athletic. We've seen it on the football field. I get an up-close and personal view of it on the basketball court. And, of course, he had a big interception there on the defensive side, like you said. But, you know, back to that Milan defense, they hold Hagerstown to 14 points this a week after pitching a shutout against Knightstown.
3-0.
3-0. We've seen that defense up close and personal for Milan, how physical and fast and swarming they are. And, you know, this is the time of year where, you know, if you can count on your defense and you have the ability to make big plays on offense. So I'm excited to see this, whether I watch it, listen to it, whatever, this Milan-North Decatur rematch, because North Decatur's 10-1. Mm-hmm. Milan, only two losses. And, you know, talking off the air to a couple people at Milan before you and I did that Milan-Providence game, they were real disappointed in how they played. Not taking anything away from North Decatur. Obviously, they're 10-1.
Team, yep.
But you could tell that they weren't hoping to see North Decatur get upset. They weren't hoping for it. They yeah, wanted yeah. this opportunity.
Absolutely.
That they're going to get.
Yeah, and getting a chance to talk to some of those kids right here on Crunch Time, you know, Dakota Sams, Chandler Rutherford, some of those guys, you could kind of see it in their eyes, too, that they wanted that rematch with North Decatur. It was a 21-0 win for the Chargers earlier in the season, and they boast the state's best defense in terms of scoring average just 4.8 points a game.
And if you look specifically to that night in September against Milan, Travis, they held the Indians offense to 116 yards, and 116 yards for that offense. So that North Decatur defense is for real, but that Milan defense is too. I think that Milan defense has improved significantly since then, and this could be, you know, first team to 10, first team to 14.
If you're into stats, I mean, they've moved themselves all the way up to 19th in
sure.
the state at just 11 points a game allowed. So yes, their defense continues to improve, but I'm looking back to that first game of sectional where they only beat Knightstown 3-0. It might take a similar effort
sure.
in what's going to be a low scoring game when Milan and North Decatur hook up on Friday.
This could be first to 14 wins. I mean,
it might even be less than that.
It could be less than that. But hey, listen, I don't want to be that media member that has that a pat yourself on the back attitude, Travis. But you know, on this show going into postseason play, I said we're going to have three sectional champions here in Eagle Country. Kind of hedged a little bit because I had two good teams in the 4A sectional with South Dearborn. And we're 1 week away from that coming to fruition. And you know what, Travis? They've had unbelievable seasons. 11-2, 10-1, 9-2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's 30-3. Lawrenceburg, Milan, and East Central. That's 30-3. And two of those three were in head-to-head. East Central over Lawrenceburg, Lawrenceburg over Milan. So they've all had terrific seasons.
Yeah, I will say this. We certainly hope that East Central, Milan, Lawrenceburg all move on, win the sectional, and go to the regional. It does make my job tough picking our feature game of the week. And this week, I know we called Lawrenceburg this past Friday, but we're going to be calling the Tigers again this Friday when they travel out to Greensburg. And the good thing is I don't have to actually give a reason for why we're doing that. That's just how it is. So we'll be out there. Mike Perleberg, Chuck Thomas on the call this Friday, 7:10 pregame. So we'll actually, real quick, I do want to mention the Harrison Wildcats because they're 9-1 and they're going to take on Canal Winchester this week. And it's only the second time they've ever hosted a playoff game in school history. Both are 9-1, and we certainly wish the Wildcats all the best. And Connor Kennett is perhaps the best quarterback I've seen all year long. Of course, Garrett Yoon would be in the conversation as well. But with that, we'll move on to where you, we want to go to college football. We'll just go up in tiers. We'll go to college football, and then we'll hit on some pro before we get to college basketball. This is Crunch Time with JB and Double T, live from the Eagles Nest, 20 East High Street, downtown Lawrenceburg. And we wanted to get to college football last week and talk about the top four, kind of the college football playoff scenarios, maybe where some of those other teams are just outside of the top four, because they are going to bring out the college football playoff rankings this week, I believe, after a huge matchup in the SEC.
Yeah, and the biggest question right now is who's number five, because before Oklahoma's loss to Kansas State, Kansas State really dismantled them that day, there were five teams. How are you going to pick four? Right this minute, it's in whatever order, Ohio State, LSU, Alabama, and Clemson. The big question is who's number five. The second biggest question is how far does the Alabama-LSU loser drop? And, of course, you got to wait and see how that game goes. I'd be shocked if that was not a competitive game. So the question is who's number five? What happens to the Alabama-LSU loser? You can field those.
I'll give you my top four. I got LSU number one because they have the best wins across the board. Texas, number 10, Florida, number 12, Auburn. Joe Burrow's been great. They got a good defense. Like, they can really score like LSU teams haven't really been able to in the past. More explosive offense. Really like where they're at. I got Ohio State number two. Everybody knows I'm a Buckeye fan. I think I can say this without bias. UC's a nice team. They're in the top 25. They handled Wisconsin. Michigan State, not as good, but always a decent win. And IU's been a good team. They blew them out. Alabama hasn't really played anybody. Most impressive win at Texas A&M. Same for Clemson. So I would have those in my top four because they're all undefeated. Penn State's got to be number five because they're undefeated. And then it's Georgia, Oregon, Utah, and Oklahoma in the one-loss department.
Right. Yeah, when I said who's number five, Penn State is an obvious number five. They're undefeated, as is Minnesota. Penn State is going to have a chance to play them their way into the top four. When I said who's number five, I was kind of viewing Penn State and Ohio State as one team for now. So they are the obvious number five. Mm-hmm. That game's down the road. That's going to be a heck of a game. I think I still go Oklahoma as the team that has the chance to control their own destiny. And I know they got beat badly, but here's the difference. Georgia, in my eyes, laid a total egg against South Carolina. They played poorly against a team that's not as good as Kansas State. Oklahoma didn't play well, but I don't think you can say they laid an egg. Kansas State was terrific that day, and Kansas State's a much better team than South Carolina.
Also on the road, and Georgia lost at home.
Exactly. So I think Oklahoma, with the win over Texas, and they need Texas to win because Texas has had a slip up since then. But I think Oklahoma is still the one loss team. But you say that Ohio State or Penn State is going to be a one loss team, and Alabama or LSU is going to be a one loss team. And whoever loses those head to head games, I feel like stays ahead of Oklahoma, assuming those games aren't blowouts.
Yeah, because their one potential loss is going to be
better than the Kansas State. But right this minute, I have Oklahoma over Georgia, and I don't think Georgia can pass Oklahoma in my eyes, unless Oklahoma loses, without running the table and winning the SEC, which, to Georgia's credit, they are in the driver's seat to get to that championship game thanks to their win over Florida this past weekend. So here's one of my thoughts, Travis, and tell me if you agree or disagree. You rank LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Alabama 3, Clemson 4. Right this minute, I can't argue this. Call me a conspiracy theorist. I think there are factors in that room that won't get said out loud. For example, I thought Notre Dame lost their chance to make the playoffs when they lost to Georgia. Now, they lost to Michigan. Sense. Enough said. Yep. But my point is this. Notre Dame, the last two times they've been on a national stage in that setting, Alabama steamrolled them in 2012, January 2013. And then last year they made the playoffs uncompetitive against Clemson. Nobody would ever say that out loud. But I thought all year, because of what happened in that game with Clemson, Notre Dame is going to have to run the table. Now, the committee's not going to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Notre Dame fatigue, you know, who knows? Here's where I'm going with this. I think the committee is going to do everything in their power, especially because of LSU and Ohio State, how good they've been this year, to avoid Alabama and Clemson in the title game. If Alabama and Clemson stay undefeated, I think they'll do everything they can to make them 2-3. So do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so they play in a semifinal. Now, that could be unavoidable, right? If they're the only two undefeated teams and they have to go 1-2. But I think Ohio State LSU stays in that one line. And I know they won't say that out loud. I just think the nation's ready for something different.
Yeah, and I know they say they try to be transparent everything. What I want is them to get rid of the eye test. You have to factor in the wins and the losses and how big they were. You know, we talked about Oklahoma losing to Kansas State. If that's their one loss and Ohio State loses to Penn State, there's an obvious discrepancy between which one's a better loss. And take out the eye test and take out the past experiences, too. Just because Clemson's undefeated and they won the national championship
doesn't
last
mean
year
they have to be number
doesn't
one.
Mean they have to be number one, because they have not played like number one. And you can look at their schedule and how, you know, they're not really dominating certain teams. So I hope that they I don't know what I'm trying to say, really. It's just it's a fickle situation, and they sometimes, I think, they think with money and matchups, like you were just kind of saying, where they want to get Clemson and Alabama to not be in the championship game, and it just needs to be merit-based on who the top four are and go from there.
I agree with that. So let's get to the field. Alabama, LSU, is this the year? LSU hasn't beaten them since the last time it was number one versus number two, and I believe there wasn't a touchdown in that game. LSU beat them 9-6, 2011. And then that was the same year that it just so happened they played in the national title, and Alabama shut them out. That was 2011, I believe. LSU hasn't beat them since. Is this year? You already highlighted it, Travis. This is definitely, in my eyes, the best LSU team since then. Alabama, is this the year they get over the hump?
I think it might be, because I really believe in Joe Burrow and his ability. He could be one of the top quarterbacks taken in next year's NFL draft. We don't know maybe what Tua is going to be like. If is he going to play? He's coming back from an injury. Will he be 100% effective? But the playmaking ability on both sides, especially in the receiver room, Alabama and LSU, it's got a chance to be an explosive game. I think it's going to be a little bit more high scoring than people are accustomed to seeing when these two teams meet.
Well, no doubt. I mean, Alabama defense not as dominant. They're young. Of course, Nick Saban's not going to use that as an excuse. LSU's offense much better. Definitely more high scoring. I'll go LSU, too.
LSU's been tested.
I will go LSU, too. And that's a point we talked about off air. LSU's been tested right this minute. LSU can absorb a competitive loss to Alabama and still stay in the playoff race more so than Alabama can, because LSU has a better body of work. That goes back to what you were saying. Is Alabama going to, if they were to lose, kind of stay elevated in the committee's eyes because of their run of dominance? You know, who knows? But I certainly hope to have to find out, because I'm kind of pulling for LSU. I've been down there to Baton Rouge, made a couple friends down there.
Oh, I'm pulling for LSU,
made a couple friends down there, so I'm pulling for the Tigers. But, you know, I've got Oklahoma as the top one-loss team, like I said, but there's going to be two really good one-loss teams here in 3 weeks after we get through the big time. Well, hey, just real quick, I know we hit some NFL. Penn State, Minnesota.
Yeah.
How seriously are you taking Minnesota? Because if the nation isn't taking them seriously, they've got their chance Saturday at noon.
Yeah, I think that'll be the big measuring stick game for them in terms of, you know, seeing if they can actually compete with the quote-unquote big boys of the Big Ten. But, you know, they got that program going in the right direction, and that side of the conference is certainly theirs to lose. So that's going to be a good measuring stick game for them, and we'll see if they can get to Indianapolis and get another chance to maybe play an Ohio State, Penn State, whoever comes out of
well, I think they can absorb a loss to Penn State, still control their own destiny, and get to Indianapolis. So they might have two marquee opportunities. They have a marquee opportunity this Saturday, but I think even if they lose, and I think Penn State wins that game Saturday, but I think Minnesota can still play their way to Indianapolis to play either Penn State again or Ohio State.
And you want to see them just be competitive. If they don't win the game, but they keep it close, then you're saying, okay, well, this program is starting to become for real.
I think they will. They really dominated. Nebraska's really the most I've watched them in one setting. They really, and I know Nebraska's not having a great year, but Penn State dominated, or Minnesota, excuse me, dominated Nebraska. So that should be a good one.
Yep. All right. And we got to get on to some pro football, too. Got about 5-6 minutes left in the broadcast here. Crunch time with JB and Double T. And, we got some Colts action to talk about. I know it stings, man.
This
was the one game I was really, really rooting for the Indianapolis Colts.
This show had me in such a good mood, and now we got to talk Colts. That's a heartbreaking loss. Brissett gets hurt, obviously. Brian Hoyer comes in, does a good job, makes some good passes. But if you watch the game, momentum shifted late second. Colts with a golden opportunity to go up 17-3. They're up 10-3 driving. Hoyer throws a 96-yard pick six. And if the Colts can punch it in and make it 17-3 going into the half, or not, it wasn't quite halftime, but if the Colts can get a two-possession lead with their running game and the way they can ground and pound with Marlon Mack, I like their chances. So Hoyer did a fine job, made one mistake in the red zone, made him pay for it. Colts had some uncharacteristic penalties. You know, Darius Leonard got a late hit late that pretty much gave Pittsburgh a chance at 3 points that they got before the half. And it's still a heartbreaking loss to not play as well as they have, to lose Brissett, to have that big momentum-changing pick six and still have a chance at the end. And there's no sense in me talking about the Adam Vinatieri. He missed it. What's his future? We'll see. It's just heartbreaking for them to lose such a golden opportunity to get to 6-2 because the Texans are keeping the pressure up in the AFC South.
You know what can heal all wounds, though?
The Miami Dolphins coming to town.
The Miami Dolphins, absolutely.
Well, and to your point, Travis, you know, the Colts had, after the big win against the Texans, you looked at the Colts' schedule, Denver, Pittsburgh, Miami, Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. They escaped Denver. They don't get Pittsburgh, so they've got back-to-back home games with Miami and Jacksonville.
Got to get them.
Got to get them. Got to get them.
Because they have Houston looming right after that.
Right after the Jacksonville game.
Yep, so, and then Tennessee after that. That's their next four. So, the first two, very winnable. Houston toss-up, Tennessee,
and
is always
and of
a
course,
tough matchup.
They didn't have T.Y. Hilton yesterday, so by the second quarter, you're playing without your quarterback and your star receiver, and to still have a chance. It's the NFL. There's no such thing as an easy win. Major opportunity slipped away yesterday, and certainly, most importantly, hope Brissett's okay, because Jacoby Brissett's good.
MCL sprain is okay. What they officially diagnosed him as, so Frank Reich said it's going to be kind of play it by ear for this week, but even if he doesn't go, you think there's still enough there for the Colts to beat the Dolphins, even though Ryan Fitzpatrick had a good game this past week, but they played the Jets, and let's be honest, the Jets aren't much better than the Colts. And speaking of not being any good, the Cincinnati Bengals
now
still winless after that bye week.
Dolphins, the Dolphins won yesterday.
Yeah, Bengals are in a driver's seat.
Yeah, so let's get right to it, Travis. Bye week, no game to talk about, but they were in the news. Where do you stand on the quarterback change? Right decision, wrong decision?
I think it was the right decision, but the timing of it wasn't very good.
The timing was terrible. Don't sugarcoat that.
Yeah, let's be honest. This core group of players, Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins, some of these guys, they've been together for a long time, and they've not won squat. So I think they failed miserably in not trading any of those guys at the deadline to stockpile first, second, and third round picks like we've seen San Francisco do. We've seen Oakland do it. We've seen Cleveland do it, and their teams are in a lot better situation than the Bengals. You hate to see star players get traded like that, but they should have tried to trade some of them. Tyler Eifert, he could have went to play for somebody else. Andy Dalton, they bench him on his birthday 3 hours before the trade deadline, didn't give him a chance to get out of town. But at the same time, it is time for a change, and let's see what Ryan Finley has, because if he doesn't have anything, he's now got 8 games to prove he has something, and if he doesn't have it, the Bengals will have a high draft pick get a new rookie.
That was my next question. Is Finley the quarterback of the future, or is this his audition? Because you're going to have Burrow, you're going to have Tua, and who's the third?
I know Herbert's probably coming
from Oregon.
Yep.
What's your take on that? Your personal, is he the guy for the future, or is this his audition?
I think this is his audition. He was a fourth-round draft pick. I mean, he was a good college player, and scouts say that he's very smart and he's got good field vision, so maybe this is going to be what the Bengals need, but they still don't have a very good offensive line. He's going to get thrown into the wolves against Baltimore this coming Sunday, so he's going to have a chance to play 8 games and see what he can do, and if he performs really well, then maybe they go a different route in the draft. They can get a Chase Young, defensive end from Ohio State, or start to rebuild that offensive line. It's going to be interesting, but now there's at least a reason to watch the game to see if this kid's worth a darn.
Well, Chase Young is awesome.
He's awesome.
Chase Young is awesome.
I mean, he's the best player in college football in my eyes.
There's no other way. Well, we got a few weeks to talk about this, but does he at least get invited to New York?
I hope so. If he keeps doing what he has been
doing.
For
the Heisman presentation is what I'm alluding to there with New York.
You know, have a big moment against Penn State. Have a big moment against the team up north.
Team keeps winning.
Go win the Big Ten championship. And, yeah, he probably
he's got to get a seat in New York. He's dominant. He's terrific. It pains me that you're such an Ohio State fan, as is one of my best friends here in the community. Yeah. But I got to be objective there. He's terrific.
All right. Well, let's about one more minute. Let's get to these college basketball games that are going to happen tomorrow night, because it's a great way to kick off the season.
College basketball starts with a bang.
Yeah, it's, on election night. I'm not going to get to see these
night,
games.
It's Duke versus Kansas tomorrow at 7. Kentucky versus Michigan State to follow.
Top four teams in the nation.
Always four of the top 10. This year it is 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, Michigan State is a team that starts slow. I don't say traditionally, some years. They are carrying the number one by them. They're loaded. They've got everybody back. Of course, Duke is in kind of the middle of a rebuild. I'm excited. If you had to put me on the spot, give me Duke and Kentucky tomorrow night. But the other thing, Travis, and keep your eye open for this, college basketball fans. I'm a Notre Dame grad, Notre Dame basketball fan. I was a student manager there. Notre Dame plays North Carolina.
Very good.
Wednesday, okay? And if you're like, hey, I don't care about Notre Dame, North Carolina, my point is like the ACC and the Big Ten are shifting to these heavier conference schedules, and you're going to start seeing conference games of significance pop up in November and December. This is not old school where conference starts after January 1st.
Right,
I mean, there's going to be significant, there's going to be snoozers like there always is too, but there's going to be significant college basketball games all over the calendar.
Makes it fun. And real quick, I'll say Duke and Michigan State tomorrow night will be my picks. And if you're looking for another game on Wednesday, how about UC up in Columbus taking on the Buckeyes?
Is that this? I knew that was this week. Yep. I don't know why I thought that was Saturday. Thank you for that.
Yep.
But so, there you go. So Wednesday night. I'm telling you.
Should be fun.
October, it's a great time of year.
All right. Well, that's been Crunch Time with JB and Double T. We're free agents here doing the show live from the friendly confines of the Eagle's Nest here in downtown Lawrenceburg. Thanks so much for tuning in. And be sure to check out the show again next Monday, 6:30 to 7 o'clock, right here on your hometown radio station, Eagle Country 99.3. Thanks and good night.